The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now, 10 years ago, the UK voted to leave the UK. A decade later, Brexit continues to shape politics, trade and indeed daily life. So has it been a success or a failure? Neil Richmond is with me, Fine Gael Minister of State for International Development and Diaspora. You're very welcome to the programme. This was a big deal for you at the time. I mean, people might remember back. You were on every UK show during all of these negotiations that were happening. It was a tricky time, one that you had to balance very carefully in terms of what you said. How do you reflect back on it?
Well, I think one day I did 23 media interviews in a row, starting at 5 to 6, finishing at 12:30. And that wasn't rare. Mm-hmm. And it was the whole time trying to keep a very clear balancing act that you're talking about the affairs of another country. And as a politician, you don't want to talk about the internal affairs of another country. But ultimately, the decision had a massive impact on Europe and particularly Ireland, Ireland more so. And this is what we were dealing about. We were dealing about the peace process. We were dealing about the Good Friday Agreement and threats to it. So it got really, really difficult. And what I my big takeaway was the sheer level of ignorance about Ireland, about how the EU works, not just generally in the UK, but amongst really senior politicians who had been making this case.
I saw you were writing about this in the Business Post at the weekend, and you were saying that they didn't really have a plan. They didn't really know what Brexit meant in a very practical sense. And you're not talking about voters there, are you? You're talking about right at the top. They didn't know what... Well, they didn't expect it to happen, firstly.
No, the result went against all expectations. 52-48, extremely narrow. Like, the result made no sense. That's been proved out now. And how many times I had it screamed into my face that leave means leave, but no one ever explained what leave actually means. What does this mean for the border in Ireland? What does this mean for, you know, customs unions, the price of food, the price of anything? No one ever had a plan. No one right at the top. And it goes back to the heart of the people who pushed this. It was a clear agenda from the likes of Nigel Farage, Jacob Rees-Mogg, and some more shady characters who really were pushing that sort of free market libertarian view. Mm. They wanted us to go on WTO terms, completely unheard of.
But it was David Cameron who made the commitment back at the time of that election that, you know, if he won, that he would run this referendum, fully believing that Remain would win. But you make the point in that piece yesterday, you can't kick the EU for years and years and years and then expect to convince people in 6 weeks that it's the place to be.
Well, people forget about this Brexit referendum is it wasn't the first one. The UK joined the EC with Ireland in 1973. And what was the first thing they did? They had a referendum in 1975 to leave it. And this was a constant theme. The party that was initially anti-European was the Labour Party. And over years, that became the cause of the Conservatives. And they were constantly being outflanked by UKIP, which is reform now as reform. And the whole time was, we don't like having to do this, but Europe is making us do it. And how many times have we heard that here? How many times have we heard Irish politicians, oh, well, Brussels is coming over and they're forcing us. Even last week, when we're talking about the EU Migration Pact. Oh, this is an assault on the Irish people. We should be having a referendum. Hold on, we had a parliament. We had a Dáil elected in the last term who said they'd enact this. We passed the legislation and this is coming in. So constantly saying that shadowy forces over in Brussels are forcing to it. The last two Secretaries General have come from Dublin and Wexford. You know, constantly hammering the EU. It's easy politics, but it's lazy politics. Mm-hmm.
And so today, you know, given we've seen Keir Starmer come out through the black door on Downing Street and tender his resignation, essentially, and Brexit is very much back on the agenda again, isn't it? What will you do? You know, they're all asked, what will you do about membership of the EU, membership of the common market? Do you think it will be revisited?
It depends on the result. Wes Streeting, who would like to be the next Prime Minister, would like to be the next Labour leader, has said they should have a campaign to rejoin or at least rejoin the customs
union.
Doesn't
look like he's going to go, though, this time.
Look, I'm no fool. I fully expect Andy Burnham to be the next Prime Minister after this. And I quite welcome that. I met him the day you met him and not so long ago. Good guy, good strong Irish roots, has been a good mayor objectively. But he certainly hasn't said that they'll rejoin the EU. If anything, he says, no, I'm going to make Brexit work. And I feel sorry for Keir Starmer for loads of reasons. Objectively, he hasn't been a bad prime minister, but he's been completely hamstrung by the impacts of Brexit. Whoever replaces him and whatever they try to do, they are inheriting a British economy and a British society that has been systematically damaged by Brexit, and there isn't a clear pathway out.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the EU is concerned, and we know that the EU wrapped itself around Ireland, you know, it was like fortress EU with Ireland right at the centre of it when the negotiations were happening. Would the EU welcome the question of Brexit to be raised again now?
It depends which member state you visit, to be quite frank. And this is the thing, when Brexit was dominating my life and the headlines everywhere here, you'd go over to a meeting in Brussels and it wasn't even mentioned. Because the further you moved away from, geographically, from the UK, it just wasn't a big an impact. Economically, society, and they go like, well, let them have their moment and they'll make their decision. The EU has moved on. Certainly, there are a lot of people, rightly, at the leadership at a European level want a closer relationship with the UK on areas like security, defence, tackling the pandemic, climate change, energy needs. Like, Britain's important. It's still a really big country, regardless of the impact of Brexit. It's still in the G7, it's still in the G20, it's still a hugely powerful country around the world. So certainly within the EU, lots of people would like a closer relationship. But I don't know if there's too many people. I'd love to see the UK come back in, of course I would. But I don't know how many other European colleagues really want to get pulled into another British psychodrama going on about Brexit.
Well, there's also that theory that if the question was raised again, that there would have to be penalties, that you can't just step in and step out and expect that to be a free process. It would have to be expensive, difficult and perhaps painful.
And this played into a lot of the real leave argument. I can't believe we're net contributors to the EU. It's a good thing if you're a net contributor. We're much happier that Ireland's a net contributor. The British had also negotiated a series of carve-outs over the years, just like the Danes had and indeed Ireland had in various areas. But trying to rejoin doesn't mean that you inherit all those carve-outs that you had before and various things that you had derogations on. Equally, the UK literally paid a price to leave the EU. There is a divorce settlement. There is that requirement. So just thinking you can just jump back in and everything's tickety-boo is unlikely. And there's certainly a lot of people within European circles who would look at Britain getting closer as a good thing. But is it realistic that they're going to rerun a referendum only 10 years on, even if the decision, the referendum, was absolutely ridiculous by any objective mm-hmm. measure?
But would the EU be stronger with Britain in it?
100%. 100%. Like, it has really weakened the EU that we don't have one of the world's largest economies, one of the world's most powerful countries as a member state. From an Irish point of view, very selfishly, the British were a really important ally within the EU for so many years. And even the ability to meet British ministers every couple of weeks at a European Council, I'm meeting a British minister tomorrow afternoon, but that doesn't come with the regularity. We don't have, literally last week, the Taoiseach was attending a European Council meeting with all the other heads of state. Now when he meets the British Prime Minister, or whoever will become the British Prime Minister, it is an event. It's not the regularity. And when it was a regularity, it was a good thing. So to have the UK in the EU would make it a much stronger, much more powerful force when we're looking at a world where the US and China are the competing interests.
Now, how do you rate Ireland's relationship with Britain right now? Because there was a time during the negotiations when we were, for some at least, public enemy number one.
Oh, it was toxic. I remember getting into an Uber in London and the driver turned around to me and goes like, what's your problem? What are the Irish people's problems? Why can't you just respect us? And like, I was an absolute nobody, but he had just seen my face in the Express. He used to do attack pieces on Leo Varadkar and throw me in it. Thankfully, at a government level, relations are really, really good. And that didn't start necessarily with Keir Starmer. I will have to give credit to Rishi Sunak. Rishi Sunak, when he came back in with the absolute craziness was the 40-yard days of the Liz Truss premiership. He said, no, this can't go on anymore. Let's settle things. Let's make the Windsor framework work. Let's get things back to normal. We've been very lucky that we've had British ambassadors over the years, British officials who've maintained that relationship mm-hmm. and allow things settle. We look at Northern Ireland, horrible scenes there a couple of days ago for sure, but it is working the assemblies back up. It's back to being a bit more routine, even if we're facing into the July marching season. So relations are in a very good place. I have hopes, real hopes, that they can be as good, if not better, under Andy Burnham. A couple areas in relation to legacy that need to be resolved. Hilary Benn has been really good on that, but more progress. But certainly the days of Ireland being public enemy number one, when Leo Varadkar, Simon Coveney were regularly, every day they were attacked in the right-wing British media, that has certainly subsided.
It's eased, yeah. It's eased. But it was just, when you look back on it, because in the early days of Brexit, didn't the British government representatives go to all of the individual member states and try and do side deals? And mm-hmm. they were told very swiftly, no, the EU will negotiate as one. And that was very helpful to Ireland, wasn't it?
And that's the way it always should have been. And I think that's where a lot of people underestimated what European solidarity and what the EU actually is about. It is about being one block. If Ireland tried to negotiate trade deals with Canada individually, we get terrible terms, but we do it as a block of the world's largest economic market. David Davis, longtime Eurosceptic, appointed Brexit minister, said on the night, "This will be done in 6 months. I'm going to go straight to Berlin and get it negotiated." Every time I went on British media, but the German car manufacturers are going to throw Ireland under the bus. It's too important. And you go, no, European solidarity is so much more important than the economic interests of a bilateral relationship, even if that bilateral relationship is huge. Mm-hmm. And it was.
Did you ever worry about that, though? That there would be an agreement which would throw Ireland under the bus and throw the Good Friday Agreement under the bus?
When I was with European colleagues, absolutely not. Genuinely, and I sat with Michel Barnier, who was the key negotiator, multiple times, and this was night and day. This wasn't about Ireland. This was about the EU and the importance of the union. I did get worried when I'd repeatedly have to go on Irish media, and particularly Northern Irish media, which was a trickier station, believe it or not, and people just couldn't, because of it, and I go back to my central point, the level of ignorance about how the European Union works meant people couldn't believe that the EU actually stuck up for a member state and stuck up for what the union actually means.
Mm-hmm. And do you think now, as you look at it, that the deal, I know you don't agree with Brexit in and of itself, but the deal that was negotiated, is it working for Ireland?
It's protecting Ireland. The situation could have been a lot worse. I've said it a million times, there's no such thing as a good Brexit. It's all about damage limitation. And what we do have at the moment is working as best possible. There's certainly areas we'd like to see it work better and be cooperation to be closer. But thankfully, thanks to European solidarity and a really consistent negotiation mandate, and I must say, political agreement across the spectrum here, and I'd hammer the opposition at every opportunity if given the chance, but there was multiple times when they could have absolutely abandoned the unified Irish position and they didn't. And I do believe the opposition deserves a bit of credit for that as
well. All right, we'll leave it there. Minister of State Neil Richmond, 10 years on from Brexit, thank you for coming in to join us. Now,
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.